Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest OIES podcast, which is being brought to you by the GAS programme. My name is James Henderson, and I'm Head of GAS Research at OIES, and I'm joined today by Manuel Calvo-Diaz, who's the Head of Energy and Environment at the Naturgy Foundation, and by Alex Barnes, a Senior Visiting Research Fellow at OIES. We're going to be discussing Alex's latest paper, which was supported by the Naturgy Foundation, entitled EU Joint Purchasing of Gas, an Assessment, which was published on the 20th September 2023. We're recording this podcast on the 27th, so a week after the publication. Manuel, Alex, welcome to the OIES podcast series.
Hello, James. Hello, Alex.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Manuel, let me start with you. Perhaps you could just give us a quick explanation of why the Naturgy Foundation has supported this research.
The Naturgy Foundation is a non-profit institution, and one of its main aims is to generate a serious and rigorous debate on the most relevant issues related to energy, environment, and sustainability based on knowledge and realities. And to promote this debate, as it cannot be otherwise, we turn to the real experts in the field we are dealing with. And regarding the most relevant issue related to energy, it is clear that the situation that we have been experiencing right now around the gas supplies in Europe is a matter of great concern. Since the unfortunate events that began in the first quarter of 2022, many initiatives have been launched in the EU with the aim of trying to help overcome the crisis, and one of them has been the joint gas purchases. This measure, which has been implemented on a transitional basis, must be properly analyzed in its actual effectiveness, especially if it is considered to transform it into a permanent measure. The Oxford Institute for Energy Studies, as a benchmark institution in the energy sectors, provide the expert knowledge necessary to generate this serious and rigorous debate, and that's why the Naturgy Foundation decided to support the preparation of this document that will be discussed today.
Okay, great. Well, that's a great introduction. Thanks very much indeed. So, Alex, let me come to you as the author then, and perhaps you can start by just giving us an explanation around the background to the EU joint purchasing mechanism.
Well, the idea of joint purchasing of gas has been around for quite a while. Back in 2014, and this was in the wake of the annexation of Crimea, Donald Tusk suggested having a joint purchasing mechanism for gas as a means of counteracting Russia's supply position. Now, that wasn't taken up, and indeed other measures meant that actually Russia's pricing power, or Gazprom's pricing power, was reduced as a result of competition, so long as Gazprom played by the rules. But what we saw after the invasion of Ukraine was that there was significant curtailment of Russian gas supplies, so the price went up considerably. And so at the beginning of 2022, the EU member states got together to look at ways of how they could manage this. Part of this was setting up the EU energy platform in April of 2022 to look at ways of cooperating. And then when the situation got a lot worse in August, when prices went even higher, there was a lot of effort to combat the impact of the gas crisis. And two key things that came out of that was the price cap mechanism, or the market correction mechanism, and the other was the joint purchasing mechanism. And this was put into a regulation in December of 2022.
Before we get onto that regulation, I guess, if I remember correctly, one of the objections to it, the idea in principle, was to do with competition rules and, you know, potential WTO. How was that brought into consideration this time around?
Well, interestingly enough, and we'll come on to this when we look at the regulation, despite it often being referred to as a joint purchasing mechanism, it isn't. There is no requirement for joint purchasing of gas. There's no obligation to do it. It just says that companies may jointly purchase gas. And of course, they may jointly purchase gas anytime they like, so long as they follow competition rules. And in both the regulation and in all the material you see from the EU and from Prisma, who operate the scheme, it says you must follow competition rules.
Okay, so I probably jumped the gun a bit there then with that question, but let's get into the detail then. So I think the regulation number is 2022/2576. So what did that regulation actually put in place? You've already mentioned that it wasn't really joint purchasing. So what was it?
Okay, well, it set up temporary rules to enable this mechanism. So it's basically going to last for 1 year. There is the possibility of the EU reviewing it at 1st of October to see whether they want to continue it. A couple of other things. Anybody who is buying more than 5 terawatt hours of gas had to notify it to the Commission. There's provision for a temporary services contract. So in other words, the Commission doesn't run it itself. It gets somebody to do it for them. The demand aggregation says that member states and companies must submit demand bids or aggregation bids for up to 15% of their storage obligations, because there's another regulation that says you have to have so much gas in store by the beginning of each winter. And that works out at about 13.5 BCM or so, which is, you know, a volume, but it's not big compared to total EU demand. And the other thing in there was, as I say, may joint purchase, doesn't say you have to do joint purchasing. So this is only an enabling mechanism. Have to follow competition law. The EU Commission will help you with that, but they're not going to give you any special exemptions. And the other thing is that basically no Russian companies or anybody who's connected with them or sanctioned by them can be involved in the process.
Okay, so essentially it's a voluntary process. Certain volumes companies are encouraged to bid certain volumes into the mechanism, or to bid to purchase certain volumes into the mechanism as a minimum to fill 15% of storage. Is that a quick summary?
Yeah. I mean, the way it's been described, the way it was described at various sort of gas conferences and stuff was as a dating platform for LNG, because a lot of the focus was on supposedly getting LNG, but it is not a formal joint purchasing mechanism. And I suspect a lot of the reason for that is because of these issues about competition law and how you kind of square that circle, not to mention how you square it with the whole way they've been liberalizing the gas market over the last 20 years.
Okay, well, let's get into what actually happened then, so we can perhaps see how this worked in practice. I think in January 23, so the EU chose Prisma to operate what became known as Aggregate EU. So what happened then?
Okay, well, Prisma also operates the capacity booking platform for pretty much most pipeline capacity interconnection points in Europe. So they know the market really well. They set up a mechanism and basically put in place a mechanism and a platform where you could have demand aggregation. So companies could say, I want this much gas at these different points. And it was either at particular LNG points or at particular gas pipeline points. And there's a process for that. And then also companies who want to supply could put in their offers. And then Prisma has an algorithm which would effectively match the two. And then if you have a match, what goes on after that is the companies then go away and negotiate. So in other words, none of the actual contracting or buying is done via Aggregate EU. That is all off-site, so to speak. And that comes back to you may contract, and this helps you get together, but it doesn't actually make you buy. And we've had 2 rounds so far, and we're just actually in the middle, I think if my dates are correct, we're actually in the middle of the 3rd round at the moment.
Okay, so what have we learned then from these first 2 rounds? What were the results?
Well, the problem is we didn't learn an awful lot because information has been somewhat sparse. And I think this is a real problem in terms of evaluating whether this mechanism has been effective or not. What we do know is that in round one, which basically was in April, May, you had demand bids of 11.6 BCM submitted. You had supply bids of 13.4 BCM submitted. 10.9 BCM was matched, of which 2.2 BCM was LNG and 8.7 BCM was pipeline gas. We don't know for certain if any contracts have been signed on that. I've heard on the grapevine that yes, one has. Maros Sefcovic, the vice president of the commission, also said that a contract had been signed, but we don't know how much for, we don't know for what price, we don't know where the gas was delivered. Round two, similar kind of thing, demand bids of 15.9 BCM, supply bids of offers of 15.2 and 12 BCM was matched. So a bit more matching than in the first round, but we don't know any contracting as a result of that. And of course, the results for round three, which closes on the 6th of October, that is still, you know, underway, so we won't know that.
So there's been a lot of noise about, you know, particularly, well, obviously the EU Commission who have been promoting this, about how they're helping EU customers access gas on better terms and conditions. But from what you've been saying so far, it's very difficult to judge whether that is the case or not, because we don't really have any information about you know, the contracts that have been signed? Or am I being too cynical? Is it actually justified, that claim?
No, I think it's true. We simply don't have the information. Now, what is interesting is that the Commission has actually launched a tender for a consultancy study on the effectiveness of the mechanism, and also looking at how it might be improved and also could be extended to other things. So hopefully, whoever does that study will actually get access to the information to be able to figure out, well, have people who weren't able to buy gas before been able to do so? Were they able to get it at a better price than they would on the market? And maybe we'll come on to some of this in a minute.
I mean, do we know which buyers and sellers have actually been using the platform? I mean, and do we know whether customers have been interested in aggregating their demands to try and get a better deal?
Well, certainly somebody has been, because you have had bids and offers on it. And based on the information that's available, we know that about 150 companies have signed up, but we don't have anything more than that, or at least I hadn't seen it at the time that I wrote the paper. We know that according to comments from Maris Sefcovic, the vice president, because he held press conferences after each round, basically. So that's where a lot of the information has come from. He said there were 25 reliable suppliers of the gas that was offered and stuff. But we don't really know much more than that. And I think in order to do a proper assessment, as I say, you'd need to know what were the volumes, who was buying and who was selling. Because one of the ideas behind this is that it would bring in new suppliers or new sources of supply, and that it would enable companies to get access to lower cost gas. Well, you need to know the information in order to compare to what's going on in the wider market.
And the assumption has been, I guess, that most of the suppliers are LNG-based. Is that right, or is it a mixture of pipeline and LNG suppliers?
Well, the curious thing is, the mechanism was touted, one of the justifications that the Commission has on its website, that this is a means for landlocked countries or companies to get access to LNG. Now, there's a big problem with that, and I hope you will ask me about that in a minute. But in terms of the volumes that we know, basically only 20% was LNG, that 2.2 in the first round, versus 8.7 BCM of pipeline gas. So at best, only 2.2 new supplies of LNG could have been brought in by this mechanism. And I say at best, because we don't know who was supplying that LNG. Did it come from existing portfolio players? Or was it a completely new supplier to the EU? We just don't know.
Okay, well, let's get on to that other question. And that, I mean, obviously, once you've matched buyer and seller, you need to then move the gas to the market. And as you've mentioned, the idea is to allow landlocked countries to get access to LNG or other pipeline gas as well, I guess. How does the aggregate EU fit with the allocation of transport capacity and other issues in the gas market? Are they intimately linked, or is that just a problem that the buyers and sellers have to sort out for themselves?
It's a problem the buyers and the sellers have to sort out for themselves. And that's very clear that basically everything to do with final price, because yes, you have a price indicated when you bid an offer, but the final price, credit terms and conditions, how the gas is moved, all the stuff to do with the contracting, that is all done outside of the platform. Where aggregate EU sort of fits in is that it has as its proposed delivery points, either LNG terminals or VTPs, virtual trading points within the EU. So that fits with the market architecture, but it's then up to companies to book their own transport capacity, et cetera, book their regas capacity and so forth. You know, that's all up to the company. So aggregate EU, if you were an industrial buyer, say in Southeast Europe, and you wanted to try and access LNG supplies, all aggregate EU does is it allows you maybe to contact people that you wouldn't otherwise necessarily have contacted, though I do wonder about that, given that it's quite a small world, the gas industry. It doesn't help you with all those logistics. You can, under the mechanism, have either an agent on behalf or a central buyer who might be able to do some of this for you. But again, you have that in the existing market arrangements anyway. So aggregate EU doesn't add anything new in that regard.
And the other thing that is slightly confusing to me looking at it from the outside is that I thought the original idea was that you would aggregate small buyers together to create a larger lot, and you would basically, you know, get a better price for purchasing larger volumes of gas than individual in companies or countries necessarily wanted. And that would be a bargaining tool with suppliers. But from the way you described it, that's not really the case, because what it does is it matches buyers and sellers. If you're a small buyer, you're a small buyer, and you're going to have to negotiate as a small buyer. You're not combining customers together to create larger lots to give you a bigger bargaining power. Is that the case?
Well, there is the prospect for what they call a central buyer who can aggregate smaller buyers, because they have bid minimum bid levels of, I think it's 300 gigawatt hours for LNG and 5 gigawatt hours for pipeline gas. So you have to meet that minimum threshold. So, and you can use a central buyer. And as pointed out earlier, the volumes involved are not huge in comparison to annual EU gas demand. I think the other thing is, in terms of this aggregation point, we already have fantastic aggregation in the EU. It's called the market. It's basically TTF. And what that meant was that before the crisis, people like the IEA were saying, you know, Europe is the market of last resort for the world LNG market, because people know they can put a cargo in there, they will get the best price depending on supply and demand fundamentals and stuff. And you can easily do that. And the reason why they could do that is because basically all European demand is reflected more or less in that TTF price. I've always had a question mark as to whether, you know, this idea that you need something else to aggregate demand to get best buying power, you've already got a big single European market, 400 odd BCM a year. The volumes traded on TTF are multiples of that. So you've already got that demand aggregation. But if I'm being very, very fair and even-handed, I think the only way to tell is to see who has bought gas as a result of aggregate EU and find out, well, maybe they couldn't have accessed TTF. But I'm not sure that's right, because there are, if you're an industrial player, wherever you are in Europe, you can go to your utility, you can go to a trading house, you can go to any kind of middleman wholesaler. They will participate on the wholesale market, TTF. They will get you the best price. They will charge you for that service. And we have a very good mechanism that does that. And also this mechanism across Europe is pretty effective because of the price convergence you see between the local markets and TTF, which is something that ACER, the regulator, has been monitoring for many years.
Okay, so, I mean, as we move towards a conclusion here, I mean, this was catalyzed clearly by the crisis that Manuel alluded to at the start of the podcast around the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the energy market crisis, and clearly the spike in gas prices we saw in the middle of 2022. Now those prices are back down at normal levels. Now concerns over the availability of volumes are not really there to the same extent anymore. And now there's an anticipation that we may even have an oversupply of LNG by 2025, 26. Is this aggregate EU idea just going to fade away? Or do you think that it will become permanent? What's the way forward as you see it?
That is a very interesting question, because some people would like to make it permanent. In July, Maros Sefcovic said exactly that. And the tender that the EU is doing for this consultancy study looks at possibilities of making it more permanent. You'd have to put in place a regulation that made it permanent, and it would depend on whether there was support for this amongst the member states. You could see it used for other purposes. So, for example, again, coming from this tender document, the Commission talk about use for hydrogen, renewable hydrogen, for example, because we know that they want to import 10 million tons a year of this by 2030. You could see it for, they've suggested, for other gases such as biomethane or natural gas, which comes from supply chains with low methane emissions. And they've also thought about it for other sort of critical minerals, you know, needed for energy transition. So it could become permanent. I think, you know, if you were going to make it permanent for the normal natural gas market sort of operating as it does now, you'd need to see that there had been a material difference to companies in terms of, were they able to access gas at a better price than they would have done before? And as going back to the point we made earlier, without the information, it's hard to know that. You'd have to really see whether it answers a market failure issue.
So you've mentioned some other commodities where you think the mechanism might work, and maybe we'll come back to those in a sec. But in terms of the gas market, you sort of categorised the TTF as the ultimate market aggregate mechanism reflecting, you know, supply and demand of gas across the EU. Does aggregate EU, when used for the natural gas market, in any way undermine TTF? I mean, its mere presence actually sort of somewhat calls into question the validity of TTF.
I don't think it does at the moment, because it's effectively just a dating platform. It's another way for buyers and sellers to come together. And of course, that's all a market is. Buyers and sellers come together. And, you know, it enables delivery of gas at the various VTPs, for example. And that gas may then get fed into the local, you know, the local trading and stuff. So in that sense, I don't think it necessarily does. The area where it becomes of more concern is if it becomes, i.e., you have to use this mechanism, because then that does fundamentally start to go against what the EU's been trying to do over the last 20 years. One point I mention is competition law concerns. The way that, and I'm not a competition lawyer, so apologies to all the competition lawyers out there who think I'm getting this wrong. So as I understand it, you know, they will look at the impact of a joint purchasing mechanism of this on the downstream market. Now, how you define the downstream market, like in smaller countries where you have dominant incumbents on the downstream supply side, on the retail supply side, that might be an issue. I have heard, you know, people mention exactly those concerns, that this could be used a way of kind of reinforcing dominant incumbents' positions at the expense of other entrants. And that would be something that would need to be looked at. I think, at the risk of sounding indecisive and sitting on the fence, we need a proper study of how this is done and proper information made available to whoever is doing that study. But on the basis that it is now, I think it may have some issues, but it doesn't cause the harm that it would if, for example, it became a mandatory mechanism.
Okay, well, that's interesting from the gas market perspective. And you've touched on hydrogen, you've touched on critical minerals. It does seem that the concept of an aggregate EU platform for perhaps commodities that are in shorter supply, and where the demand aggregation could sort of establish a level of demand and could try and match it with relatively rare supply at the moment, that could be useful. So do you think there are other commodities where the EU might make this work or might want to impose this?
I think hydrogen would probably be the front runner. And indeed, we've already seen things, because you've got the hydrogen bank auctions, you've got H2 Global, which are trying to do this kind of thing. And the reason why hydrogen's most interesting is because there isn't a market yet. So you really are trying to figure out how much supply and demand there is. In the gas market, there's a well-established market. It's been there long before the liberalization process. So, and as indeed the way that the market worked, you know, prices went sky high, which was dreadful for lots of people, but it did have the impact of attracting additional LNG into Europe, and it did have the impact of reducing demands. You didn't need an extra mechanism to do that. Hydrogen, you don't have any of that, and you don't have any idea of what the real prices are, whether it be the price that people are willing to pay for it or the price that people can produce it at.
Interesting. So it sounds like we might have another paper coming here, which is more about whether aggregate EU is more applicable to other commodities outside the gas market. But anyway, we'll come back to that. But Alex, thanks very much indeed. I mean, Manuel, let me just come back to you for some concluding thoughts. How do you reflect on the conclusions of the report and the prospects for aggregate EU?
First of all, I would like to thank you, James and Alex, for this really, really interesting debate. As you mentioned, in our opinion, it's necessary to be very clear about the advantages of a system of this nature, no? To decide its implementation permanently, how it will affect the market, the competition. As you said, Alex, it's not so clear, especially if we don't know too much about the results of the previous. It's clear that it's very different to apply transitional emergency measures than to make them structural and permanent. Implications are considerable and should be properly considered. As I said at the beginning, our objective in Naturgy Foundation is to promote this debate by experts. And I would like again to congratulate the Oxford Institute, especially Alex, because I believe that this document, without a doubt, pushes this reflection that is really, really needed, especially in this moment with the new European Union decisions regarding this mechanism. So thank you very much again for this extraordinary survey.
Great. Well, look, thanks very much, Manuel. That's a very interesting conclusion. And Alex, thanks a lot for your thoughts. I'll just point everyone to the Oxford Institute website, where you can find the paper entitled EU Joint Purchasing of Gas and Assessment by Alex Barnes, published on the 20th of September 2023. But without further ado, I hope you found that an interesting discussion. We'll be back with another gas program podcast in a couple of weeks' time. But until then, please take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.